Sound Opinions is supported by Goose Island Beer Company, which brews beers that are highly rated by beer critics and beer lovers alike. More at gooseisland.com. We don't need to be the only beer you drink. We just want to be the best beer you drink.
This is Sound Opinions, and later on in the show, Jim, we are going to bring the rock with record reviews. Two new albums from Japandroids and Ty Segall.
That's later in the show. But first, we're going to talk to Shirley Collins. She's best known in the UK, but she has become a major influence on a new generation of musicians.
Come all you young fellows that follow the gun and beware of sharpshooting by the light of the moon.
Shirley studied English folk music as a teenager, fell in love with those sounds, and started her recording career in 1958. She's since made more than 20 albums. In 1959, she also traveled throughout the South with Alan Lomax, the master of field recordings, getting on tape, often for the first time, the likes of Mississippi Fred McDowell, Almeida Riddle, and Hobart Smith.
Yes, Jim, and, you know, she was very deeply rooted in these rural folk traditions, more so than some of her UK contemporaries. But at the same time, I think what really made her so influential was the way she was innovating in her arrangements. She was bringing in elements of jazz, Renaissance music, Indian music, psychedelia. But she stopped recording music in 1978, suffering for decades from a vocal condition called dysphonia. She finally released her first album in nearly 40 years in 2016 called Lodestar. It's an honor to welcome Shirley Collins to Sound Opinions.
Thank you.
Shirley, I want to start with your approach to singing. Characterized as never overselling a song, no histrionics, straightforward, but also very beautiful. And that was an intentional style. Why was that?
Well, I think it's partly because of my own background with grandparents who sang to my sister Dolly and me during the war when we were in their air raid shelter. And they always sang straightforwardly. And as I sort of progressed into learning more about traditional music, both English and American, and the field recordings, those old singers, you know, they just sing the song straight. They're not selling you a song. They're singing it to you rather than at you. And I've always just loved that way, that they allow you to sort of hear the song and make up your mind about it and about what's happening in it, you know, these often bloodthirsty events. And I'm often quite embarrassed, really, when people do dramatise the songs or just sell them a bit too hard. It just doesn't sit right with this sort of music, in my opinion.
Come in.
So you don't believe in holding a note for 35 seconds, and we have some national anthem singers here in America that it seems to be more about them than the song. Well, and with you, it seems to be exactly the opposite.
Thank you. That's how I'd like it. But yes, I agree about this note holding. They haven't even established the tune or the melody before they start taking off, you know, into vast leaps. And I just think, what's the point? You know, we want to know what this melody is. And it's sort of exaggerated. I think it's just showing off as well.
You know, Shirley, in recent years, there has been an incredible revival of interest in your music among, for lack of a better word, hipsters.
It was round and about last Martinmas tide when the green leaves were swelling that a young Jimmy Grove of the West Country fell in love with Barbary Allen.
We had the wonderful Colin Molloy of the Decemberists. He's been on our show two or three times.
Yes.
He talked for 25 minutes about Shirley Gollins. And, of course, he made an EP covering your songs, and many people have been discovering, you know, people who are one-third or one-quarter your age been discovering your music. You know, how does that make you feel? Was that getting back to you, that all of a sudden... you know, people are fascinated with these recordings you made in the 50s and 60s and 70s.
Well, yes, it was getting back to me, and it was just, it was wonderfully encouraging in one way, and it sort of made me so sorrowful in another way, because I didn't think I would ever sing again, but it was lovely to be remembered and to, you know, be something of an influence on younger singers. And it's a surprise as well, you know, because my music is sort of quite individual and not showy, and I'm used to people being a bit ambivalent about it, you know. They're not sure whether it's the sort of music they like or not, but then it's sort of changing, you know. People seem to be sure now that that they quite like it, and I think because it's honest music, and I think because I choose really good songs to sing, if that doesn't sound too vain. And because I hope that they trust me and trust the sincerity of it all.
Yeah, I think that comes across, Shirley. It's quite an array of admirers you've got from, you know, contemporary generations. You know, Jim mentioned Colin Molloy, you know, Graham Coxon, Jeff Tweedy,
yes.
Johnny Greenwood of Radiohead, Angel Olsen.
The blacksmith courted me 9 months or better. He fairly won my heart, wrote me a letter.
There have been tribute albums, there have been covers albums recorded of Shirley Collins songs, all the while during this period when you were not recording. But I think a lot of these people heard not only the purity in your voice and sincerity in it, but also the fact that you were doing something new with a very ancient tradition. I think you go back to a record like Folk Roots and New Roots from 1964 that you did with guitarist Davy Graham.
Davy, yes.
It was a very forward-thinking record for that time. You were combining these ancient songs with these very contemporary-sounding jazz folk arrangements. In fact, arrangements that were ahead of their time in many ways, laying the foundation for future generations of artists to emulate. So you're basically laying the foundation for the entire English folk revival.
My dearest, the time draws near when you and I must part.
What was your thinking going into these kind of recording sessions? Where did you feel consciously that you wanted to do something new with this tradition?
No, I don't think it quite happened like that. Once I'd heard Davy play, for instance, then I knew that it would be a great opportunity to record with him. And because he understands music so well too, although he plays a lot of different things, he plays jazz, which I frankly don't like very much. I don't like jazz at all. You don't go into a studio thinking you're going to do something different, but what happens when you're there is that something does happen, you know, and then later you're aware that you know, something has tripped a bit and that you've moved forward and pushed the music into a different direction, but without actually spoiling the songs at all or altering the songs. Just the accompaniments, you know, have changed.
Since you have made a gown for me among the summer flowers, so I will make a suit for thee among the winter showers, among the winter showers.
Another innovative area in your music was the use of those early Renaissance-style instruments. Those arrangements are often written by your older sister, Dolly, who was an organist and pianist.
Yes.
And she was a collaborator with you on some of your finest recordings. I'm thinking of something like Anthems in Eden in 1969.
Nellie was a milkmaid, bonny, brisk and gay. She always took delight with young Roger Flutterby.
What was your relationship like with Dolly?
Oh,
because she seemed to be reading your mind and vice versa.
No, there was just a couple of years between us and we were very close. We grew up during wartime Hastings and we were always together, whether we were out in the countryside walking to get away from the bombs and things, or we were just the best of sisters. And we both had this same upbringing, of course, and that we both believed in English music for some reason. You know, it seemed to have been born in us that this was the music that we treasured most. And Dolly learned composition. She studied under a composer, Alan Bush. And when I asked her first to write some arrangements for me to sing to, you know, it was just the most, it was a lovely opportunity for Dolly as well, because then she could get cracking on writing some decent stuff. And working with her was a great pleasure. There was always lots of laughter as well, although a lot of the songs are so serious. There was just so much laughter and fun. And whenever she wrote a new arrangement, she just played the first line and I knew exactly where to come in. You know, it was just, she read my mind, I think, and she understood all these songs so well.
Are you going to leave me?
And we both loved early music as well. We both loved the sort of rough, unsophisticated sound of those old instruments, which I think really, you know, suit the songs. They fit well with them.
Surely a lot of your fans point to No Roses from 1971 as the album to start with. That one was recorded with an ensemble of 25 musicians, had members of Fairport Convention and Steel Eye Span, even jazz saxophonists. Was there something special about that record?
Yeah, I guess there was. I mean, to have Richard Thompson on it for a start and people like Simon Nicol, it was just such a wealth of talent there playing the arrangements. It was a happy album to make. You know, people came into the studio and played their bit and then wanted to stay and you know, join in on a bit more. The songs are wonderful on it. And it was the first time I had sung with an electric backing for a start. And it's pretty irresistible once you've done that. You know, it's quite a different feeling from recording, say, with early instruments or with you know, strings.
Twas on a song.
It was wonderful. I'm jolly glad I made it. I mean, you know, there was a bit of some people didn't like it because, you know, Shirley Collins shouldn't sing with an electric band, you know, horror. But I loved it.
Yeah, so somebody else got guffed for that once. What was it? Oh, that guy from Minnesota.
Yes, no, I think I met him once. And in fact, I did meet him when he first came to London at the Troubadour Coffee Bar, and there was another American singer who also wore cowboy hat and boots called Rambling Jack Elliott. And so Bob came down. This was in the very, very early days before anybody knew him. And he sang a couple of songs and he sloped off to the toilets to smoke dope.
On the ground floor of what's become known as the English Folk Revival, and it's had an amazing longevity. Compared to a lot of the music that was made in the 60s, it seems like this music, your music in particular, has endured through many generations, through many trends. Styles come and go, but this music seems to be there from the get-go. And you were part of a very vibrant scene. You were one of the first, and then there were people like Fairport Convention and Richard Thompson and Steel Eyes Span and Shirley, what was your take on your peers in that English folk revival scene? Did that music all resonate for you?
Well, yes. I mean, a lot of it pleased me enormously. I thought Fairport Convention were wonderful, especially the album Legion Leaf, one of the great albums, I think, of mm-hmm. you know, all time.
I forbid you maidens all that wear gold in your hair to travel to Carter Hall.
I mean, I love the Incredible String Band, although they were very fey and sort of wayward, but you couldn't help but like them, you know.
Ducks on a pond, very pretty, swimming round.
Well, what I think it does, you see, it takes us back to perhaps a more innocent time. Although why I say that, I don't know, because the songs certainly aren't innocent. They deal with all sorts of bloodshed and cruelty and revenge, as well as all this sort of idylls of you know, country life. But I think what it is that actually hooks me onto it is it's its age, you know, the way it's lasted. It's just a miracle, really. I would love just to, for instance, to be able to trace just one song back from its beginning, you know, right up to the present day and see what journey it took, what path it took, you know, how many singers sang it and how they passed it on. It's so romantic.
Sweet William arose one May morning and dressed himself in blue. We want you to tell us something about the long love between Lady Margaret and you.
After a short break, Shirley Collins tells us about traveling through the American South collecting field recordings with Alan Lomax. And later, we review the new records by garage rocker Ty Siegel and the Vancouver duo Japan Droids. That's in a minute on Sound Opinions from WBEZ Chicago and PRX.